For the rest of the hour, something very small and perhaps maybe very deadly. Carbon nanotubes are very small structures. They're tiny tubes. They're actually rolled up sheets of carbon. But they have very unusual properties, and so inventors and scientists around the world are working on ways to incorporate the nanotubes into new products. Some are already out there on the market, like bicycles and tennis rackets, and you can buy carbon nanotubes by the kilogram on the internet. But writing this week in the journal Nature Nanotechnology, scientists are turning on the warning light, saying that under the right conditions, some forms of these carbon tubes, these longer carbon nanotubes, might be able to cause the same effects in the lungs that long asbestos fiber do, maybe even lead to lung cancer, mesothelioma. Joining me now to talk about it and the possibility for these causing mesothelioma is Andrew Maynard, Chief Science Advisor to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. He joins us from our NPR studios there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Maynard.
Hi, good to be here.
You're welcome. Vicki Colvin, she's Executive Director of ICON, the International Council on Nanotechnology. That's a consortium of academic, industrial, government, and NGOs looking at nanotechnology policy and safety. She's also Professor of Chemistry, Professor of Chemical Engineering at Rice University in Houston. Joins us from the Baker Institute of Houston. Well, Houston, welcome to the program, Dr. Colvin.
Thank you.
Andrew, let's talk about the nanotubes themselves. How are they similar to asbestos fibers?
Well, first of all, let me just clarify, it's only some nanotubes that are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're interested in here is things that physically look like asbestos fibers. We know one of the things that makes asbestos fibers particularly harmful is when they're very thin, when they're very long, and when they're very straight. So many years ago now, people started to ask whether this wonderful new material, carbon nanotubes, whether it could produce similar looking fibers. So this is what we were particularly interested in. Could carbon nanotubes that happen to be very long, very thin, very straight, cause the same health effects as these long, thin, straight asbestos fibers?
Mm-hmm. And you found?
And we found in this particular instance, yes, they did. We were looking at one particular disease, mesothelioma, which mm-hmm. is a cancer of the outside of the lungs, usually associated with exposure to asbestos fibers. And in this particular study, which really just showed whether something has got the potential to cause this disease, we found that long, thin carbon nanotubes behave the same as long, thin asbestos fibers, but short or curly nanotubes didn't show any obvious harmful effect.
Do we know why this happens?
We think it's because these long fibers are behaving in the same way as the asbestos fibers. Mm-hmm. And what happens here is the body just cannot physically deal with them. The way that the body gets rid of material that shouldn't be there, especially in the lungs, is to send out these scavenger cells, macrophages, mm-hmm. to wrap themselves around the material and take it out of the body. But if you've got a really long fiber, the macrophage cannot physically wrap itself around that fiber, and it ends up dying in the process. Mm-hmm. And so especially if you've got a fiber there which doesn't dissolve, it lasts a long time, you end up causing damage in the body over a long period of time, and in some cases that can lead to cancer.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking about long tube nanofibers and possibly being linked to cancer. Vicki Colvin, is this a cause for alarm?
Well, you know, I don't think immediately it's a cause for alarm. The paper's given me a lot to think about in terms of where these materials might be used, right? I think that mm-hmm. comes to everybody's mind when you hear about this. So the first question is, my guess is that they're not widely used. But that's a guess, and we can talk about that. And then I think the second thing is that we're just now seeing the earliest reports of these kinds of findings in rodents, for example, in the study, and in some genetically engineered mouse and another. And so in those cases, you know, the data is just beginning to come out. And I think the definite causal link in humans, in real-world exposure conditions, is something we'll develop over the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, you've been thinking about this for a while. You even have a blog about nanotubes and health and safety.
That's right.
What first triggered you to start thinking about this?
Well, it actually goes back a long, long way. When I did some of my first research, I'm a physicist by training, and I got interested in how we can use really sophisticated techniques, electron microscopes, to analyze very small particles years and years back. And so that was my first love, if you like, within science. But now, over the last 5-10 years, as people have begun engineering nanoscale materials and nanoparticles, I've been able to apply that interest to actually looking at these new materials and asking the question, how can we work out what might make them harmful, because they're very unusual materials in many cases, but more importantly, how we can engineer them to be safe.
Now, nanofibers are relatively new. The nanotubes are new, but we've had the nanoparticles around, the buckyballs, things like that, for quite a while. This is quite something different, is it not, Vicky?
Well, you know, the multi-wall carbon nanotubes are part of a family. You know, nanomaterials, which are kind of the backbone of all nanotechnology, are incredibly diverse zoo of different types of, you know, materials formulated in different ways. It's a fun place to play. And the particular type they studied in this paper actually is, I would not call it a new material. You know, C60, the discovery of that dates back to the 1980s, and carbon fibers and carbon nanotubes were discovered as an entity in the 1990s. So actually in the history of nano, they're actually pretty old as these things go. They are, you know, part of the whole, you know, big gigantic collection of materials, and they're a particular type, and they happen to be long and thin with dimensions similar to asbestos. So the paper kind of explored a pretty interesting avenue.
We're going to have to take a break, and we'll come back and take lots more time to talk about this and take your calls. Our number 1-800-989-8255, talking about these carbon nanotubes and the research published this week that talks about the long ones being similar to asbestos fibers. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about nanotechnology in a recent paper published about carbon nanotubes, the longer ones being very similar to the shape of fibers from asbestos, and possibly in laboratory experiments showing that they might actually cause cancer like asbestos fibers do, with one of the paper's author, Andrew Maynard, and also with Vicky Colvin, Executive Director of the International Council on Nanotechnology. Andrew, I imagine this has caused you've gotten a lot of reaction to this paper.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It's been an eye-opener for a lot of people, I think, but there again, for some people, it's something that was expected. I mean, there are many people out there that thought, okay, something looks like asbestos, not surprising that it behaves like asbestos.
Mm. I want to just make the point that I was talking with Vicky Colvin about before the break, and that is this is not a condemnation of all nanotechnology, is it?
In fact, I don't think it's a condemnation of any sort of nanotechnology. To start with, this is just one small fraction of one particular type of nanomaterial, carbon nanotubes. But then, though the research indicates that there could be harm here, it also gives us a roadmap towards developing safe forms of this particular material. So it's certainly not condemning anything. It's actually opening the route towards developing it responsibly and safely.
Because we have nanoparticles around us everywhere. We have them in our face creams and sun creams, and we rub them into our skins, but they're not made of carbon nanotubes, are they?
Many of them aren't. You can make nanometer-sized particles out of many, many different types of materials. So, for instance, you can buy a sunscreen with titanium dioxide or zinc oxide particles in it. You can buy cosmetics with little sort of soft nanoparticles of various molecules in them. So, yeah, there are multiple different types of nanoparticles that we're going to come across.
Mm-hmm. You on your blog, you talk about a study done in Great Britain which has basically foreseen this problem, or it calls for more research into the health effects, the possible health effects.
Very much, yes. And I mentioned that a number of people haven't been too surprised by this. Over probably the last 10, 15 years, a number of people have flagged up this similarity between some asbestos, between asbestos and some nanotubes. But the important study was one that was carried out in 2004 by the British Royal Society, where they looked at this emerging field of nanotechnology. And one of their main conclusions was that this new material, carbon nanotubes, was so like asbestos that it was a top priority to try and understand whether it actually led to asbestos-like diseases.
Mm-hmm. Vicky Colvin, Do you think now more money should be going into researching the health effects, the potential health effects?
Well, that's kind of it's a biased question for me. But I think that it should go into there for not just because, you know, we want to make sure, you know, what's going to happen if a particular material ends up in your body, but also to help us, as Andrew said, make all of this technology safe. You know, we can't afford not to do nanotechnology. We have so many big problems that are facing our world that we're going to need every last innovation that this field brings us. And one of those big innovations is actually the innovation of doing it safely the first time around. Mm-hmm. And that's what the research is there, is that we're not taking questions about implications and putting them into one box and then trying to develop the technology another. Rather, we can really do it together. Mm-hmm. And so predictive models, you know, being able to develop ways before you've even made a nanoparticle to say exactly how it's going to influence the environment or a person are actually something we can really imagine doing in the next decade. And that's the kind of outcome that we can expect if we do research in this area correctly and with the right amount of support.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, we can buy these carbon nanotubes by the bottle over the internet, can't we?
You can. I mean, there are a number of companies making them, but there's one company in particular, Cheap Tubes Incorporated, that you can log on and you can buy anything from a gram to 10 kilograms of the stuff.
And that would be pretty dangerous if you inhale it, if I understand you correctly.
Well, if you did things with it that you probably shouldn't do with it, such as opening it in an unconfined area and snorting it, yes, it could be harmful, I suspect.
I'm with kids with science fair projects and whatnot. Would they not be in danger?
That is actually a serious issue, and I think this is where people need to be very careful, not only the manufacturers, but people putting out guidelines, because it is possible for anybody to buy this material and do something potentially dangerous with it. And at the moment, there are really very few guidelines about how to use it safely.
And where would you hope those guidelines come from? And what kind of research, now that you are a researcher and have seen this, where would you hope it focuses on?
I would hope very much that, first of all, from the government, we have a very strategically targeted research program that looks at the outstanding questions that need to be answered and works out how to address those. So, for instance, we know from this study that we've got the potential to cause a very harmful disease there. What we don't know is whether you can actually get these long, thin fibers airborne in sufficient quantities to cause disease, whether they can be breathed in, and even if they are breathed in, whether they move to the very sensitive outer layer of the lungs. Mm-hmm. Those are all very, very clear research questions that we've got to have a strategic research program mm-hmm. to address. Mm-hmm. And I would say, first and foremost, that's got to come from the government, but industry have got a very clear role there to play as well.
Mm-hmm. Vicky Colvin, is there a way to make these nanotubes less harmful?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, I think one of the things the study, you know, gave me a lot to think about was actually the fact that we don't know where the materials are. So I just want to underscore that if you look at asbestos, if we draw more on that analogy, you know, the people, you know, it's a disease that doesn't show up for 20 to 30 years after exposure. So it's not something you can really mess around with. And if you do get diagnosed with mesothelioma, it's pretty much a death sentence. So, you know, we have to take very seriously where the materials are currently being used. And I think that the fact that it's not the producers who know what the multi-wall carbon nanotubes are and how to handle them, it's the fact that, you know, what about the guy who gets the broken tennis racket and decides to, you know, get out his sander and shave down the handle to rewrap it? Well, he might get exposed. So I think it's incredibly important that people who are profiting right now from the sale of these materials take very, very good steps to you know, label, provide information to everybody who might kind of come in contact about what the materials are,
right,
even at this early stage.
So that would be a good first step, is to label everything that's made out of nanotubes that you can buy in the store.
And absolutely, because I think once you begin to get you know, the information that there's an issue, and especially with this particular health effect, which takes so long to develop, you know, you can't really wait around until the science is done. You want to have the answers mm-hmm. More quickly. But in the meantime, you know, finding ways to get product information out there that really works is going to be very important. And certainly, of course, you can make these things safer. Something that we've looked at is how to do that specifically with carbon nanotubes.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, you agree? Get labeling going?
Yeah, with labeling, it depends what sort of labeling you're talking about, whether you're talking about putting a big yellow sticker on something saying beware carbon nanotubes inside, or whether you're talking about putting something a bit more sophisticated on the ingredients label. But whichever way you look at it, people need to know what's in these products so they can make informed decisions.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Let's go to Gary in San Antonio. Hi, Gary.
Hi. My father actually worked to manufacture carbon nanotubes for about a year. I wonder, is there any way to test to see, you know, if he's already inhaled some of these or if he has some of these in his system?
You know, I don't think there is an easy test at the moment. We're still just learning how to either track these things down or understanding how they might lead to health effects. If he was only working with them for a year and it was a reasonably clean environment, there's unlikely to be any significant problem there. But obviously it's worthwhile keeping a check on potential illnesses, especially to do with the lungs.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Will in Flagstaff. Hi, Will.
Hello. Thank you, too. I love your show, man.
Thank you.
I wanted to know, this isn't going to hamper the research on, like, the space elevator because they're trying to make long nanotubes for rope, right?
Yeah, this is that's a great question because I think that in the nanotechnology community, one of the we'll call it one of their fears is, you know, there's so much to do and so much cool stuff, so many hard problems we can solve. What's going to happen to the research? And I think that actually this kind of data coming out early, while it's a little bit of a, you know, let's hope people don't overreact, on the other hand, really makes it much easier to do the research because when people do ask you, yeah, what about the effects, you actually have something to say. So I think that the two go hand in hand. Plus the fact that you can make a space elevator and you'll know how to code it so that if the fibers did come out of it, they would be benign.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
What makes carbon nanotubes so terrific that everybody wants to make something out of them, Vicki?
Well, I think that the real reason is that they're just an amazing kind of tube. You know, a lot of the things that we have out there that are fibers are solid, right? They have something in their middle. These things really are like straws. And the stuff they're made out of, graphite, has some pretty spectacular properties so that, you know, electrons don't just sort of hop atom to atom. They move ballistically down one of these things. Because of the nature of that, of how the carbons are hooked together, the strength is absolutely extraordinary. And it's all lightweight because it's carbon. You know, it's not steel. It's not the things that we're more familiar with as a structural material. So it's this amazing confluence of having carbon at the center of the material in a graphite-type form, which is, by the way, nothing more than what's in a lot of our pencil lead, and in this amazing tubular structure. So it's they're very, very special materials, and, and really, to some extent, the greatest hopes of nanotechnology have been pinned on them.
Daniel in Minneapolis. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I have a question about carbon bikes.
Go ahead.
Bicycles are now made of carbon. I'm assuming that that would employ nanotechnology, and a lot of times you have to kind of cut down, say, your seat tube. Curious if that's a health issue.
Interesting you should bring that up. Yeah, and if you look at some of the high-end bike frames out there at the moment, they do use carbon nanotubes. And the argument is usually made that once the nanotubes are in something like a bike frame, they're never going to come out. But you're right, as you say, if you're really into this area, you are going to customize those frames, those tubes. You are going to cut them at some point. And one of the unknowns here is whether that process actually leads to the release of these fine carbon nanotubes. Okay. The chances are it probably doesn't, but somebody's got to measure that.
Yeah, and you probably don't want to take a risk, so you should wear a mask and do your very best to limit exposure. The other good news about the composites, too, is that because the stuff is so strong, one of the reasons people use it is they don't have to use as much. So compared to a conventional carbon fiber composite, you'll have a lot less material potentially that comes out. But my advice is still, if you know it's there, take every precaution. And the NIOSH website and a few others have some suggestions for what to do.
Talking about carbon nanotubes this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. But will a mask stop a nanoparticle? I mean, I wouldn't think so.
Well, it's surprising, but it probably will. If you look at how most air masks work, the particles that are most likely to get through around about 300 to 500 nanometers wide, large. The smaller particles are actually collected more easily simply because of the dynamics of what's happening there. So the chances are if you've got a really fine nanofiber, it will get caught by that mask. But again, I don't think we need to be complacent here. I would love to see the research proving that.
Will these stay in the environment forever? I mean, do they biodegrade or they just hang around?
Well, you know, that's a really fascinating scientific question because, you know, there's, for example, organisms that eat wood and are very good at breaking down lots of complex carbons. And a lot of people are studying the biotransformation and biodegradation. You know, can you get, you know, will slime mold eat a nanotube is a great question, actually. But, you know, the problem is that it's the shape. So a lot of the naturally occurring carbons that are like similar to this one are kind of planar. And so what that means is that they enzymes that do the degradation don't fit the tubes. So people are looking hard for what those degradation mechanisms might be, but some of the obvious pathways haven't proven yet to be effective. So they may be biopersistent. Now, if you modify them just so slightly with some chemical help, you can really quickly create systems that biodegrade. So it may be that, you know, before you put them in the environment, you treat them with something a little bit stronger than bleach to get that process going so that then nature can finish its job.
But these will have to be guidelines that everyone follows then, but no one, you know, that there aren't, that don't exist now for them.
Yeah, I very much so. I mean, at the moment, it's almost like driving blind into the carbon nanotube future. We've really got to understand how to work sensibly, wisely with this material before it appears in too many places.
Do you know, have you heard any reactions from political people, Congress people, you know, committees that say, hey, we better start doing hearings on regulations for these things?
Well, not directly in response to this, but if you look at what's happening up on Hill at the moment, especially with the Science Committee, they are looking at how you develop nanotechnology safely. And there is actually a bill going through the motions at the moment that looks at increasing the emphasis on understanding how to use engineered nanomaterials safely. So this is something that's certainly very high up on the agenda as far as Congress goes. It's a little bit hard to see where it is in terms of the federal agencies at the moment.
Quickly, Carol in Roseburg, Oregon. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello. I'm slightly horrified by your discussion of labeling the ingredients or having some signal on the outside, because if somebody's sanding a tennis racket they bought at a garage sale or from a thrift store, 10 years from the point of origin or 20, you know, you're going to open Pandora's box to a bunch of unsuspecting people.
You mean if that label is there or if that label has come off in the process?
It's come off in the process, and even people who buy used goods often are not, they don't have the instructions or the label or anything.
That's actually a very interesting question, and I think it just demonstrates that as we develop this technology and similar technologies, we've actually got to think through issues like that if we're going to work out how to develop it wisely.
Thank you, Carol. This obviously bothers you, does it not? Oh, because she's gone. I guess a lot of people are very concerned about this now. And probably rightfully so, I would imagine.
Well, you know, I think it's right to be concerned, but I think we can't afford to lose sight of what we could actually achieve here. We're really at the very beginning of the curve when it comes to developing this technology, and we actually have a wonderful opportunity of getting it right and not making mistakes that we've made in the past.
And I guess one of the take-home messages, and I've said it before, and I'll try to say it as we wind up here, is that carbon nanotubes are not the same as all the other nanoparticles.
Very much so. That is just so important to realize that all these different types of nanoparticles are very, very different with their own risks. And in many cases, they're likely to be very safe.
All right. Vicki, any final word?
Well, I mean, I think reacting to the prior caller, I mean, you always have to look at what the benefits of the technology are providing you. And, you know, if it were me, I wouldn't, even though, you know, I might like to ride a bike, I wouldn't ride a bike that contained asbestos just because it was a little bit lighter. Mm-hmm. So maybe in that case, you don't derive enough benefit to really justify what this very uncertain risk. But there are other risks. For example, you know, what if we researched this stuff and we made airplanes a lot lighter? Well, they would use less fuel, and that would be a really, really huge issue. So I think there are places it makes sense.
All right. Let me thank both of you. Andrew Maynard, Chief Science Advisor to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. Vicki Colvin, Executive Director of the International Council on Nanotechnology. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've run out of time. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com if you want to learn more about the nanotube research. We've got it there. Also, we're podcasting and blogging. Maybe someone will send us a video of how you make carbon nanotubes or research of nanotubes in your laboratory. I'd love to put it up there on the website. Have a great weekend, a safe Memorial Day. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.